And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and joining me today will be Mike Gregg and David Holly. In this special episode, we'll be doing our mid-season review, as we're almost halfway through the foam season. We'll be discussing our thoughts on the season so far, which will include who we think has been the player of the season at this point. Later on, we will discuss the January transfer window and share what positions Fulham should be looking to bolster. Along with that, we'll talk about which players we feel could potentially be leaving Fulham. Lastly, we will discuss the clubs that are ahead of Fulham minus the top two, and can Fulham end the season in the top six? We have much to discuss. Before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Mike Gregg, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, David. Doing really well. Looking forward to Christmas and... Looking forward to today to talk about Fulham. I haven't done that for a couple of weeks on the show. And, we're in an interesting position, aren't we? And it's an interesting time. So, I'm good. Are you, Russ? Is it cold over there in Boston?
It's very cold, Mike. It's actually been extremely cold. So it's supposed to warm up the next couple of days. But if you thought it was bad when you came and visited me, it's probably about 20 degrees worse.
Okay, well, I'm glad to be in mild England then.
Okay, my friend, very good. David, how are you doing?
Hi, hi, Russ. Hi, Mike. It's good to be on the show with you too. I haven't done this one for a while, I don't think, us together. It was a bit nippy this afternoon playing tennis, I have to admit. I don't normally feel the cold, but it was quite chilly on the old hands, but probably nothing by your comparison, Russ. And I think it's going to get wet and very windy for the weekend, I believe, here in the UK. But nice and calm here this evening on Cottage Talk. So looking forward to getting into it.
Okay, very good. All right, guys. Before we talk about our mid-season, go through this mid-season review, I have something that I definitely want to talk to you guys about. And it has to do with this Fulham and Cardiff City fans protest. Definitely want to get into this. I was actually sent this over the weekend. This actually, I believe, went out on Sunday from the Fulham Supporters Trust. So I'm going to read this post and then get your thoughts on it. The title is Fulham and Cardiff City Fans Protest Over Sunday's 11:30 a.m. FA Cup Kickoff. And here's the post. The Fulham Supporters Trust and the Cardiff City Supporters Trust have written to BBC Wales this weekend. This was posted on Sunday, protesting at the television company's decision to schedule the FA Cup third round tie between the two clubs for a Sunday morning kickoff at 11:30 a.m. on January 8th. The decision to reschedule the fixture at short notice leaves supporters traveling from London with just one direct train from London to Cardiff, which gets in at 10:59 and is the latest manifestation of just how low down in the game's priority list match-going supporters now feature. Both trusts have long supported the campaign ran by the National Supporters Groups, the Football Supporters Federation, and the Supporters Direction on ticket pricing and away travel. The FA Cup third round was once a special weekend for football supporters up and down the country, but this decision highlights just how little magic of the cup remains. Okay, this was posted on Fulham Supporters Trust on Sunday. Mike, I want to go to you first. Let's talk about this protest, my friend.
Well, I mean, protest may be the wrong word, but it's certainly... You know, ever since the draw was made, I mean, first of all, Cardiff away, as dull as dishwater draw as we could have, apart from possibly Sheffield Wednesday away. And, you know, you wait for the television, BT, Sky, ITV, BBC, whoever it is, you wait for them to announce their games, and they do. And then you look at, you know, booking your train or arranging travel in some ways to go to the game for that particular Saturday. And then out of the blue, BBC Wales say, oh, you know, we've got a chance to show a game live. It's going to be Cardiff, obviously. Cardiff or Swansea, we'll go with Cardiff. Oh, you're playing Fulham. Let's do it on a Sunday, 11:30, before the main games start on BBC One, so they don't clash. And the clubs have got no... in it. BBC Wales, they have a right to televise these games, and they were the ones who conjured up the kickoff time on a Sunday morning, where, as we've written in the joint letter, we did the Fulham Sports Trust did it with the Cardiff City Supporters Trust, and we've written to BBC and to the two clubs, and you know, basically complained that for Fulham fans, certainly there is only one train from London, and it gets in at 10:59, and so you have 30 minutes to get to the ground, and that's without any delays. And you may not know, Russ, but over here at the moment, you're lucky to get any kind of train. So sometimes, so banking on a Sunday service being there on time is risky, but it's also about getting to the station that you're going to travel from. And then, you know, so we felt we had to, as two supporters trust, you know, just make our point. And to, and we've been very surprised and very pleased with the reaction we had on, you know, national press yesterday. We had Henry Winter, who's a fine journalist over here. He was, you know, he tweeted it out as well, and it's had a lot of traction and got a lot of interest. It's not going to change the game's kickoff time or anything like that, but we just felt we had to make it clear. And fair play to Fulham. You know, they're putting on free coaches to get to the game. I mean, the match tickets are only a tenner, admittedly. But the time, it's not a time to be playing football, not professional football. You know, 12:30 is bad enough, but 11:30, no good at all to anyone. So we've raised our voice, we've shouted, we've had some good response, but TV pays the bills, and unfortunately we have to, you know, take it on the chin. But yeah, disappointing that it's going to be kicking off at that time.
Listen, I'm very happy that both Supporters Trust put this together, and let's clarify a little bit of what's called a written statement to BBC Wales. And that's all you can do at this point. And at least you made your point, got it across. And I think that's important. Like you said, even though it won't be changed, at least you got your point across, Mike. So I'm glad that the that both trusts did something like this and has gotten some notoriety out of it, some notice in the press. I think that's a good thing. David, what are your thoughts about this whole situation?
Well, it's, you know, it's, you could say in one respect, it's a futile exercise, because you're never going to get anywhere with the TV companies.
Right.
The supporters is always the last person to get, you know, their views heard, really. This has been going on for a long time. I mean, this is a real tip of an iceberg, because, you know, you look at even the hallowed FA Cup final, which was always a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday afternoon. They've messed around with that. They've been played it in the evening. I think it was last year or the year before. And they worked out that by the time the match finished, and most of the trains to whoever one of the finalists were, I can't even remember who the other finalist was. That's terrible, I know. But there weren't even trains home for the finalists, for the fans, because they've moved it to a Saturday evening kickoff, or there were engineering works, or there was something along those lines. And they don't seem to take any respect of the supporters' needs when they make these decisions. It's just purely for their TV scheduling. You know, and I can understand that if there's already matches scheduled for the afternoon on a Sunday, that, you know, if they're going to schedule one, they've got to put it at a slot where it's not going to clash, of course, because of, I don't know if there's rules about that or just purely for sort of TV audience, but the supporters are the ones who lose out. Again, you know, Sunday, it's difficult to get anywhere on a Sunday morning, unfortunately, on public transport. It's not just round the corner. So, you know, it's great that Fulham have, you know, I assume out of their own pockets making this gesture to help fans get there. But is it going to change anything? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it's a different perspective on some things. You know, Fulham at the weekend, I mean, I like the traditional Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. It suits me from where I travel from. Right. If they move it to a Saturday sort of 12:30 kickoff for TV, it's fine for me. Actually, I like that better, because it actually works better with the way the trains run. But if they move it to a Saturday evening or a Sunday when there's no trains locally, or a Friday night, I can't get home, it's a real pain for me. But for some people, it probably fits better. But in the main, you know, it's just, you know, the way that the football has gone. And we're getting the sort of the rough end of the stick, because the clubs at the top level, of course, get an awful amount of money for this TV thing. And they probably don't care that there's a bit of inconvenience, because the money from TV probably far exceeds the revenue they get from their season ticket holders and through the gates. But for where we are, it's not such a big thing. The amount of money involved is much less. But of course, you need the publicity as a team. You have to take these things when they're there. Has a team ever turned around and say, no, we don't want to be on telly? I don't know. Maybe there's been other overriding reasons why it can't happen. Maybe the police have said, no, we can't move that match. Policing levels, safety, security reasons. But will the supporters ever get a better deal? I doubt it. I really do. And it's great that obviously the supporters trust and Cardiff, that, you know, we're both singing from the same hymn sheet here on this one. That, you know, they're making a stand for the fans, but I think that it's just kind of, you'd say, the expression I think you'd say is pissing in the wind, to put it bluntly, I'm afraid. It's just, you know, it's a great gesture, but I don't think it's going to get anywhere. And unfortunately, as a football fan, we have to like it or lump it.
Yeah. No, David, listen, it's a valid point. You know, like you said in the beginning, it's futile because they're not going to win. They're not going to change the date. We're already talking about all the time. I mean, it is what it is. It's not going to change. But I do like the fact that these two supporters groups have come together for this situation and have bonded together for this situation. It won't change it. But it's also a signal to the television companies out there, said, listen, you know, we have a voice too, and we're going to make it known. And they probably won't change their mind. Maybe not now, maybe not in the future, but I always think it's good to be heard. So I'm glad that both supporters trust have done this. Mike, before we move on, anything else you want to talk about this situation?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like the word futile
okay.
You know, I mean, you've got to make a stand sometimes. If we really wanted to protest, we'd not go to the game, or we'd do something like that. You know, you can't just roll over and let them do this. You've got to, you know, put your hands up and say, look, we're not happy with this. And if next year or in the next round, BBC Wales, for whatever reason, want to, televise another game, then maybe if they think twice, then that will be a result. But
that's a good point.
You can't. You know, fans are being treated very badly at times. You know, I see constantly, Fulham are not on Sky because, Villa are on, or QPR are on, and whatever. And I know people like yourself, Russ, appreciate us being on TV. But for fans are actually going, it's not only football, it's lots of other sports. When they muck around with times and put it on and it's all television audience led, it makes it harder to get to games, plan the day, that type of thing. So, you know, it's a gesture, and we've done it. And like I say, we're pleased with the response. But yes, we knew that it's not going to make any difference to the time of the game kicking off. But you can't just roll over and die. Sometimes you've got to put your point forward. And we've been listened to, and we move on.
No, great points by both of you. And by you, Mike, I really appreciate you saying that, you know, maybe the next time BBC Wales will rethink what they do here. And if they do, then this situation here, this, you know, like you said, this written statement, this protest is a strong word, but you know what I mean, more of like a written statement, maybe it will have an effect down the road. It's not probably going to have an effect now, but maybe down the road, maybe they'll think twice next time. So that's, you know, again, I'm just glad that the fans were heard. And yes, very good point by you. When it comes to travel, you know, yes, here in America, I do like when the matches are on, but I've heard the struggles of fans like you, David, and also you, Mike, you know, about certain times. And you guys come first in my book. You guys, the fans that go to these matches come first before me. I obviously I'd like to see them, but I don't like the fact that that David's travel gets affected the way it does, specifically Friday nights. Or, you know, and again, I want to watch it, but I'd rather be at a time that's good for fans. But unfortunately, TV has a strong voice here, and they dictate a great deal. It's all about money, guys, and that's the bottom line, unfortunately. But I am glad that fans are standing up to it in this aspect. So goodbye, the Fulham Supporters Trust, and also the Cardiff City Supporters Trust for doing this. I applaud you both for doing that. All right, guys, let's now get into our mid-season review. And David, I'm going to start with you. Let's just take a look. We are almost midway through. We have one more match until we played all the teams once. So we're pretty much there. So thoughts on where Fulham are right now. And what are your thoughts about moving forward from that point on? Let's just talk about what we've seen before. And then I guess you could say in a little bit, we'll get what Fulham need to do in the second half of the season. But just give me your overall view of what you've watched so far.
Well, it's been a half season of three halves, which doesn't make any sense at all. I think there's been you have to divide it into
thirds.
Sixths then,
in thirds.
Portions of six, yeah, three parts to the half of the season, yeah. Really. You know, we're a fine start, a dodgy middle, and you know, a pretty fine end really to this first half of the season. In terms of where we are, probably we're actually slightly lower than you would want us to be ideally, I think, very slightly. Not so much in terms of playoff, but in terms obviously of automatic promotion. You know, there's a lot's got to happen if you want to be automatically promoted from now. It's, you know, that ship has almost sailed, unfortunately. Not completely, but playoff most certainly. There are a lot of other teams. There was a, you know, as we've seen, we had a run where we were unbeaten and yet we didn't move up the table really at all. But we are almost where we need to be. I would, you know, the ever pessimist would like us to be higher than we are, of course. you of course would probably be happy with where we are, but you know, you can never be happy until you're top of the table, not really, I suppose. So it's been an interesting season because we've seen, as I say, a great start with good hope, then a real falling off of form and issues when I think the honeymoon wore off on the new players and we realised that we weren't going to get anywhere by just having new players. We needed to learn how to use these and adapt these. And then, of course, we've seen, you know, key people in and out of the team. And I think, and this is what worries me a bit coming forward, is that the three parts of the season, the two good parts have both featured Thomas Kallas, whereas the dodgy part in the middle has not. They sort of almost coincided with his injury. I think you could almost, I think it was his, the first match back when he came back into the team was when we suddenly, of course, turned the corner. Also, that was a time when Ryan Fredericks got into the team for the first time. And of course, it's around the same sort of time that Johansson has become a regular in the team as well, that the last sort of the final renaissance. So I think we would definitely take where we are now, considering that we had that poor run, most certainly. We had a very poor run of form, considering that, you know, we want to be challengers. If we could have started the season, you know, as we are now, we'd be challenging for automatic promotion, probably, because, you know, we are a team that are playing exciting football. Look at Saturday. I mean, I didn't do the post-show that you did, obviously, with Dan and Yanis and Craig on Sunday, but you know, we outperformed Derby in all aspects, apart from goals, unfortunately. You know, we doubled their possession, literally. I think we tripled the number of shots on targets. It's pretty criminal they had two shots on targets and got two goals. And they were both poor defensively from our point of view. But, you know, Derby were a very good team. I've got to give credit to them. They're one of the best teams I've seen this year. They reminded me, actually, of Fulham. They played in a similar formation.
That's what Andy Buckley-Taylor said, believe it or not. Andy Buckley-Taylor said that again, Derby County are very similar to Fulham. It's funny you say that.
I didn't listen to that one, I'm afraid. But yeah. Yes, you know, they played with the central striker and they had, of course, Ince and Johnny Rotten doing the roles of like Aiti and Aluku on either side there. And they reminded me very much in the way they buzzed the ball around that they played like Fulham. But I think we were more than a match for them. And this was a team that won seven on the trot. And, yeah, you know, we're in a good run of form admittedly, and we stopped that run. And I think that's testament more to where we've come than, you know, a kind of nervy win against Rotherham, you know, a few nights before. But banana skin. And we managed to turn that one around. It wasn't easy, but it should have been a lot more than 2-1. The stats on that one, of course, we absolutely annihilated them. I've never seen a game, I think, 80-20 possession that I can remember. And it was attacking possession. It wasn't just fanning around with the ball in your own midfield. So for me, I think they've almost answered all the challenges that were thrown in front of them. the defensive errors of most. We are playing now with pace and with movement. We are creating chances. We're still keeping possession, but we're using it much more, you know, ruthlessly to get into dangerous areas. So, you know, as it stands now, and this is obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with injuries and things, but at this point, we are quite well placed. We're certainly on the shoulders of the people we need to be on the shoulders of. But we've got a tough run coming up again. We've got Reading and we've got Brighton in our next two games, I believe, if one out. Probably have missed one out, but in some of our next games anyway. And it's going to be tough. But if we can acquit ourselves against them, there are going to be easier fixtures to come, very winnable fixtures to come. And of course, if we can get anything against Reading again, or even Brighton, you know, we can make sure that the gap between, you know, ourselves and them is kept to a minimum and put ourselves in a good position. So, I mean, I'd say I'm very pleased with how we're performing now. I know we're not perfect. There's still been, you know, the odd up and down, but it's a dramatic improvement on where we were last year.
Wow, David, you actually sound a little optimistic, which is unusual for me to hear out of you, but I'm enjoying this. David, you're sounding a little bit optimistic.
I can't explain. I'm not even drunk tonight. I'm sitting here with my cup of tea every time I mute the mic every time I take a sip, but unless Christina's put something in my tea, maybe have you planned on Facebook to put something in my tea, maybe. But no, I'm very excited with us. I was bitterly disappointed on Saturday that we didn't win, because I thought we deserved to win, and that was against a good team. It wasn't a fluke. We weren't playing a team that were rubbish. You know, Rotherham, I was disappointed against Rotherham because we should have annihilated them. Yep. On the other hand, you know, Reading, and I know Mike and I, we spoke about this, that the Reading match, you know, they looked poor, but you know, the table doesn't lie. Reading are a good team, but we made them look very poor. Reading, we made them, but Derby, we didn't. Derby were a good side and a good challenge, but we acquitted ourselves against them. And with a bit more luck and better defending, and certainly, I think, had we not have lost Callas in the first half, I'm confident we would have won that match. So, these are the teams that we need to be acquitting ourselves against.
Sure.
It's great getting these random 5-0 wins against different teams or whatever, but teams around you have to get points off. And obviously the Huddersfield and the Reading ones were great ones. The Wolves was a bit of a hiccup in a way, but at least we didn't lose. We've been very resilient. You know, we've looked at these games. We are one of the best teams in the division now for pulling things out of the bag late on, which is completely the opposite of where we were. So, you know, I think it is a time to be optimistic. Even Scott was saying that, and Scott's worse than I am, as you know. And, you know, Scott hasn't got a lot to moan about. I think it's clear to see we've turned the corner.
Yeah.
You know, the pace and the movement in the team. We have players that seem to work better as a team. He's found, by luck or by judgment, the formula that seems to be working for us. And at the moment, you know, oppositions are finding it hard to counter. They haven't been able to stop us. And some of the football we've played has been fantastic as well. And I couldn't have said that last year, not even when we won.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this season so far. And, I'm surprised. David is extremely optimistic. Well, maybe extremely is not the right word to use, but he's optimistic, which is a good sign. This is going to sound strange to both of you, but I'm actually going to say this before I go to you, Mike. I think Fulham have slightly underachieved. I know that have a brand new team, but I think that there were points out there that they should have gotten that they didn't get. So 4 or 5 points, a couple of draws that should have been victories, you know, we're much higher up the table at this point. So I actually think we slightly underachieved. I'm optimistic, but I've also seen this, and I see that we should be higher up than we are. That's what I feel. How about your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, well, you've stolen my thunder a little bit because...
Oh, sorry, Mike.
No, I mean, going back to the pre-season shows we did, and, you know, you've got to remember, we brought in 14 players and, you know, a lot of players left, key players as well in some people's eyes. And so we find ourselves, you know, almost, one game away from halfway through the season, and we are challenging. We're there. I remember saying on one show, if we can get to New Year and be 3 or 4 points off playoffs, then we'd be in a good position for the second half of the season. In some ways, we are in that kind of place, that fourth to eighth, which I kept saying, that's what I think we're good enough. But I think you're right. We have underperformed. We are, the fans are saying, opposition fans, opposition players, managers, they're all saying that we are one of the best teams. And they are. And quite frankly, David said split season in sort of three, and I can sort of understand what he's saying, but I'll split it in two. So the first 11 games, which take us up to the end of the QPR game, and we had 14 points, which we had that run of I think 5 or 6 games where we didn't win. They had a break, came back, beat Barnsley, and really from the Barnsley game onwards, we had the Villa game, which was a bit dour really, and we should have done better, and the Brighton defeat. But really, in all those games, we have been playing really, really well, and some of the best football I've seen in 15 years, definitely. I mean, the first half against Wolves for me and was as good as I've seen as in such a long time. And having watched the Brighton replay, it's always different watching it on TV, but that first half again, we were so good. So I think we have underachieved. You look at the table, you look at how many points we got, you look at games we've thrown away like Wolves, we should have got something there, Derby, I would have taken the draw before the game. Sheffield Wednesday, again, another draw. But then you look back at, really, if you look at what, you look at teams like Brighton, you go, how are they doing so well? What, we played them off the park and they still ended up beating us in the second half. But if you look at Fulham's fixtures against the bottom eight, we've won 2 and drawn 5. And then you look at Brighton, they've played 7 of the bottom eight and they've won 6 and drawn 1. And so we've dropped, 10 points if you count all the draws, but maybe at least 6 points, 6 to 8 points. And that would put us in, third, fourth position and in a really strong position. So, yeah, I do feel we have underperformed because Jokanović has got this team playing a brilliant, at times, brand of football. He's found the formula. And as David likes to remind us all about Kearney and everything, I mean, he went from, I was lucky enough to be at a meeting this morning with Mike Rigg, and he was talking about, we spoke about Hazabad and why he wasn't playing. And that's basically because they've changed the formation. And whereas his position is best off a striker, there is no position there now for him because we play with Johansson and Kearney as two very mobile attacking midfielders. So that changed to sort of, we call it 4-3-3, but we know it's other sort of things. Right. Has turned us into, if not one of the top two, then possibly the third or fourth best team in everyone's eyes. And the top two is out of reach. Okay, I mean, I do all my stats, all that kind of stuff. It would need miraculous second half of the season from us and one of those teams to tumble away. But with, I see no reason why we should not be in a playoff position come the end of the season. It might be touch and go, and it might be the last couple of games where we actually make it. But, we should be there. So, yeah, underperforming, we're a good number of points short of what we should have. But, as David likes to say as well, the table doesn't lie, and we are in that position because we draw too many games. And
absolutely.
We've got to find a bit of steel, that extra 10%, which I think we found 5 of it, Russ. So we just need to find the other 5 now. And, I'm not scared about playing anyone. You look at Derby, they're on the back of 7 wins, and you're thinking, oh, no, really? McLaren's got them going. We're without our main striker. But tell me, did we, I mean, it's probably a fair result. But second half, we were all over them.
So, absolutely.
And that's without a main striker and losing your two starting centre-backs not playing in the second half. So, So yeah, we shouldn't fear anyone. We're going to Ipswich. Then we've got, you know, Reading and then Brighton. Three games, we should be looking minimum 7 points. I'm not going to be happy if we come away with a loss in any of those games. We should be getting, you know, 7 points at least from those.
Mike, I do agree with you, and a very good take by you and also David. And what's interesting, because if this is going to lead us to talk about the issues moving forward for Fulham, and like you mentioned, the 10%. I've been talking about the 10% on several shows, even when you're not on, Mike. Talk about how do Fulham get this 10%, and what is the 10%? You know, what is the difference here? And I spoke to Emilio yesterday. We were just chatting, and he brought up something that was very interesting. Pretty much all the teams ahead of us, Mike, have gone on some sort of run. You know, I'm talking about victory run, like 5-4 in a row. We've not done that. We've not done that. That is part of the issue moving forward. That's what I want to talk about, issues. What are the issues? How do we get to go on a run? Fulham need to go on one of these runs that all these other teams seem to go on. And what will it take for them to go on a run? And if you're asking me, the issues are twofold, and I want to get your take on what you see the issues are. Mine are obviously weakening too many goals. You know, and again, it's not a tremendous amount, but when you look at Derby County going into the match, they've only given up 13 goals. You could see why they are where they are. And a good amount of it deals with their defense right now. They have a solid defense. So that's part one. And the other part would be being much more clinical than we are, even though we are scoring a good amount of goals. They need to be even more clinical. So it's really twofold for me, the issues, to get that 10%, to get them on a run. So that's my opinion on this. What's your opinion on the issues moving forward in the season to get that 10%, Mike?
Well, I think we've made up 5%, and that's scoring goals. There was a run there where we were getting one or two, and now we're, you know, one of the best attacking teams in the league. You know, over the last 10 games, we've scored more than anyone, and that's including Newcastle. So that's not the issue. The problem in the last week or so has been the defensive frailties again and the inability to shut out a game. So, yeah, the Wolves, prime example. Rotherham, I'm not too, you know, fussed about. Yeah, could have scored more. But and Derby, really, you know, we're in a winning position there. So it's two games where we've been in winning positions. So you talk about a run, that's the issue at the moment, is we are great attacking, but we can't seem to, at the moment, switch back to being, you know, let's just take a breather. Let's see where we are, be a bit solid. So the good thing is the type of football we're playing, but it's making us a bit looser at the back, certainly in the last few weeks. And let's not beat around the bush. You know, Button is having a dodgy time at the moment. Fans certainly have lost their faith in him. And you can see the reaction of a couple of players for that second goal to him. And I think some of the players may have lost some belief in him. But that's the 5% for me, is the ability now to switch to a much more solid game. You know, reining the fullbacks, a couple of midfielders drop back. It's just going a bit solid. Because even with Parker on the pitch the other day, I actually thought when Parker was on the pitch, it was even more scary at the time. It reminded me of us when we were, beginning of the season, when we were playing the ball far too deep, far too close to the goalkeeper in the 18-yard box. So it's finding that balance for me. That is 5% now. I think defensively, we have shown that we can be good, but we seem to have just lost it over the last few games. But also going back to your point about, you know, trying to win 3, 4, 5 games in a row, unfortunately, we're now, you know, we're 4 points off sixth place. It doesn't sound a lot, but in reality, we have to win 3 games in a row, possibly 4, to actually catch sixth place, you know, because of just the way other teams accumulate points. So we are going to need that run, and the sooner we have one, the better.
I agree there, Mike. All right. David, over to you. Where do you see the issues moving forward?
I think it's ironing out the consistency. I mean, we're a lot better than we were, but there still is that inconsistencies. I mean, the Villa match is an example where we didn't really turn up. The Wolves match and the Brighton matches were matches where we could have had the match out of sight, really, at half-time. Well, Wolves, we almost did, and we threw it away. Brighton most certainly as well. It's been a little bit more ruthless, I think. And it's also, you know, we're going to talk about this in the show in a minute, but having maybe, you know, in a couple of areas, better replacements maybe, or alternatives, because some of the team really does pick itself now, or most of the team picks itself, and it'd be very hard to think, you know, and I'll give this an example. I'm not digging them out particularly. At the start of the season, we alternated between Malone and Sessegnon at left back, and it was quite hard really to ascertain really, I think, which one would be the first choice. Perhaps, you know, Slavisa knew, but we weren't absolutely sure. I wasn't absolutely sure, to be honest with you. But then we've had a run of Malone in the team. And then we saw Sessegnon against Rotherham. And I don't think he acquitted himself brilliantly. I know it's hard to come in for one match. But then we saw Malone back against Derby. And for me, it was a marked improvement, you know. And I think Malone has really established himself well in that position when we had fears about how he might turn out. And, you know, some of the team is picking itself. I mean, there's very few positions really that you would argue about at the moment if everyone is available. There's literally, you know, there's one or two positions where you could say, well, maybe we should play them. One of those being the goalkeeper, of course. But otherwise, it's very, very hard to argue against anyone else who's been the first choice. I think maybe the second centre-back is slightly arguable. But otherwise, you don't know. I guess you could have Parker or McDonald, but you couldn't have both. So the team is picking itself, but the issues are, you know, we lost Callis to injury. We don't have anybody of his quality to come in. Saturday as well, Chris Martin wasn't available. I know Chris Martin's been, you know, not everyone's cup of tea. Some people have been disappointed with him, but overall, he's fitted the system really well. And I joked, obviously, about a little drawing that Mike did for us this morning in our chat group. But it's exactly what I'd been saying about Chris Martin, that, you know, he's kind of a central pivot to everything, and he holds the ball up and he has the fullbacks running past him. He can have the central midfielders running past him, as in, you know, Kearney and Johansson. He can have Aiti and Aluka running past him. We can, you know, we have lots of options for him to hold the ball up and to lay it off. And we didn't have that on Saturday. We didn't have anyone who could really do that role. What IET did was slightly different. And as it was, we kind of alternated between IET, Piazon and Aluku having a central role with the others wide. So there are a few positions where I think we need more cover, which would, you know, hopefully also lead to better consistency. Because, of course, what we're looking for is if someone's not available or someone has a bad game, then we need someone else to step up to the plate. Someone could be suspended, of course. So it's just, you know, Saturday, we let in two stupid goals. We haven't been letting in stupid goals. We need to really, like, keep those to a minimum, absolute minimum. And we're getting there, but we let four in against Wolves. That's not ideal, is it, against Wolves? You know, we've played a team that weren't doing that well. We're 3-1 down at halftime. We've let them get back into the game, and we ended up having to nick a point to save it. So it's just, you know, you're talking about that, you know, what Mike was saying before, that extra 10%. And you were saying, Russ, maybe we've got 5% of it. Well, I want to be greedy. I want another 2.5% of it, you know, at least. I want to get closer to that nirvana of, you know, really, you know, if we are underachieving, and you can argue we have underachieved slightly, let's not underachieve. Let's achieve what we deserve. And as I say, from the football we've played and the performance we've turned in, I think we can do better than we have been doing. But so we need to be doing that. And it's just, say, consistency, turning the results, the pressure into the results, you know, the possession and the shots. You know, you can't have 31 shots against Rotherham and however many shots on target and only score two, really. You know, it was enough, but it was only just enough.
Sure.
You really want to be sending a message out to these teams, you know, wrapping in goals. And if we could have sent Derby away with their, you know, tails between their legs by not making those mistakes that we did, that would have really sent out a message of intent. But still, you know, we're there. I think we're, you know, we're 75%, 80% of the way there into being, you know, an accomplished team at this level. But we just need to, you know, iron out those few inconsistencies and maybe tweak the squad in a couple of places.
Okay, very good. And we'll be talking about positional needs upcoming, David. Very, very good analysis. You know, it seems a little similar to what I had to say as well, because I think that they need to be more clinical, like you're talking about. And obviously, we've also been talking about defensively more solid to make up that extra 5%. Mike seems to think we've got the 5%. We just need to find that extra 5% and have that run. And I agree with Mike. At some point, they have to win three in a row. Dare I say, four or five in a row, and then you're more comfortable. But Mike's right. Just to keep pace, you probably at some point have to win to get to where they need to be, three in a row, and they have not done that yet. All right, guys. Let's now talk about our player of the season so far, because I'm curious your thoughts on the player that has stood out the most, that's had the most impact. So I actually put this on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I got some very interesting answers, so I'm going to share them, and then I'll get your take on who you see as the player of the season so far. So let's start with Sarah Wadey. She says, Johansson, brilliant so far. Chris Cox says, no one really stands up, but Tomas Kalas has tightened up the defense. Roger Lewis says, tough choice between McDonald and Johansson, but I select the latter due to his goals. He is the box-to-box player we have yearned for over the last 4 years. Roger, I agree with you there. Tom Holley, Johansson. Lewis 8D, Creemore. Tomas Kalas for me. Alex Westenberger, Kalas. Richard Bamber, Johansson for me. Okay, let's go a little bit former. Samuel Beattie, Johansson or maybe Malone. Prashad Patel just gives a few names. Kalas, Malone, Johansson, or Oluko. Matthew Vidiello, McDonald let us function the way Savisi Jokanovic wants us to. All right, and let's see what we get. Mia Cutler says Stefan Johansson. Lewis Worley just sent a picture of Tom Kearney, so I'm assuming he's saying Tom Kearney. Luke Mann says Johansson. Dominic Riley, beginning Kearney, now Johansson, overall Kalas. So he breaks it up three ways. All right. And we have some others, but just for time's sake, we're going to move on. And Mike, I'm going to start with you. Who's been your player of the season so far?
Yeah, well, there's plenty of names mentioned there. I mean, Malone, probably not the player of the season so far, but certainly the unexpected, not most improved, but the unexpected player of this season, I suspect, given his reputation from Cardiff fans. Johansson certainly has been instrumental since he got into the team. And I said about splitting the season in two, he's started every game since the Barnsley game. And, you know, that's our run. He's been, you know, the man of the match, the official man of the match, I think, the last four games. So, but, you know, it's only half a season. So for me, I'm going to give it to Kalas. We missed him when he wasn't in the squad. And he's head and shoulders better than anything we have, certainly anything we had last year, and even the new players this year and the older ones. Yeah, he's the rock. He's the consistency that we need the rest of the team, and especially the defenders, to maintain. And hopefully his injury is only for a couple of games. I know he had a scan last night, but haven't heard any more of that. But yeah, so it's Kalas for me. Kearney was mentioned.
Yep.
I'm going to be a bit controversial here. I still think Kearney's can offer a lot more than we actually see. He can be sparkling, he can score a cracking goal and make a pass, but there are times I just feel he disappears. And he's captain most of the time now, and I think he should be stamping his authority even more. You know, he's been overtaken by Johansson and McDonald in this run. And, you know, if I was to say to you, who would you drop out of Johansson and Kearney? You know, it's a spin the coin time for some people, and others it would be, you know, simple as, you know, Johansson is the better player at the moment.
So far, yeah. A very good take, and very interesting that you go with Kalas. And what's interesting, David, and I'm going to go to you, because you've already talked about Kalas, you know, what happens when Kalas doesn't play for us, and it's a valid point. So I'm curious, do you have Tomas Kalas as our player of the season so far, like Mike, or do you go with someone like Stefan Johansson or Kevin McDonald, or dare I say, Tom Kearney?
For me, it's between the first two, really. That would be my choice as well. I think... you've seen something different from both of them. Kalas has offered a level of defending that we haven't seen from anyone else. He is head and shoulders really above, in terms of as a central defender. Let's not talk about the fullbacks because that's a different role. But in terms of the ones we've got, we thought obviously that, you know, last season we had no one who was any good really at all. And then, of course, we signed our Austrian friend, and we sadly thought he was the bee's knees, you know. And then and that he's someone who's struggled to get in the team. And when he has this year, we've not been completely, you know, happy with what he's done. Of course, Tim Ream always had our reservations about him. Did look a little bit better, but then he was part of that disappointing performance. Sigurdsson as well. I think I'm not sold on Sigurdsson really. So for Callas, I think he's got a fairly easy job there, really, that he is clearly the best central defender we've got at the moment. And that's shown because if you correlate our results when he's in the team as against when he's not in the team, I'm sure there's a very, very obvious trend there. In the same way, obviously, with Johansson, I mean, he obviously was a late starter a little bit, inauspicious start. Then since he's been in the team as a regular, it's coincided completely with sort of what we've been lacking, as I've said. And I've you know, gone on and on about what a great player he is, how he's kind of two players in one. He can do the, you know, the tackling, the passing, the running. He can do so much. He can do everything that LVC offered, but stuff that Tiny Cliff could do as well. And, he, you know, he's a fantastic. And to have him in the team means that Tom Kearney, there's less responsibility on Tom Kearney to be creative and to be, you know, a tackler and a ball winner. And Tom Kearney can get on with his own game. And, I tend to agree with Mike in a way that if you had to choose between Tom Kearney and Johansson, you'd probably be tended to go for Johansson at the moment because he is a more complete player, I think. So in terms of player of the season so far, I think I'm going to be a bit harsh on Callas because I do worry that, you know, perhaps he has an underlying injury issue that has caused these things. It may just be bad luck, of course. We saw this with LVC as well, that he had a sort of recurrent situation. But
can I just jump in?
I think if Callas hadn't have...
Sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to say, I was told that his hamstring that he injured there on Saturday, the part is completely different to the injury he had before. So it's not like LBC where it's been the same problem all the time.
Oh, fair enough, Ben. I wasn't aware of that. But on the basis that he has got injured twice and, you know, without doing it deliberately, he's let us down a little bit by getting injured. It's not his fault, of course, but it has been a big letdown for the team. We've really missed him. Whereas Johansson so far has been, you know, since he's been in the team, consistent rock. And I think it's, you know, he's offered that thing we've been missing. You know, obviously we were missing a good central defender. We knew that. But, you know, we didn't really know what we were missing in midfield until we see what Johansson brings to the party. I don't think we could possibly envisage that kind of energy level and running, tackling, ball winning and good passing, goal scoring that he's got. He has really got an all-round game. I haven't seen really anything that isn't... everyone has a bad point, but I don't think he has at the moment that I've found with Johansson. Maybe his temperament, but maybe he's likely to get the odd yellow card if things don't go his way. I don't know, but no one's perfect. So I am going to err on the side of Johansson so far as our player of the season. But I honourable mention, Callas, very, very close second. Yeah, honourable mention, of course, for Malone as well. Malone, you know, if you're doing it from their starting position, you'd almost have to give it to Malone because I think he's been so much better than we would have expected. We knew that Johansson had a bit of pedigree and we knew Callas had as well from their previous sort of experiences. But Malone was apparently completely rubbish and he's turned out to be actually quite useful. So, you know, a third place for Malone, I think, in that one.
Okay, very good. And David, it pains me to do this, but I'm going to agree with you. I don't like agreeing with you, but you know, again, I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to say Stefan Johansson, but very close second would be Tomas Callas for everything that Mike has said. You know, I could very easily say Callas, but I think it's very close. But I'm going to go with Stefan Johansson because, like Roger said, when I read what Roger had to say, we have not had a player like him in a long time. We've been missing that player. Now we have it. So that's why I'm glad that we have Stefan Johansson. So I'm going to give the slight edge to Stefan Johansson. All right, guys, before we get into the January transfer window, real quick, I just want to get your thoughts on the match of the season you guys have seen. So this is more to do with what you've seen. You might not have been to what you see as the match of the season. I want to see basically the best match you've seen. So, David, I'll start with you.
I think it has got to be the Reading match, really, for me, because I haven't been away for a long time. I can't remember when I last went to away match. It's just been so busy up and down. So I apologise for that. But I mean, the Huddersfield match was great, but the Reading match was a real annihilation. And that was the best football I've seen played live, I think. I know, you know, Mike said at Wolves and at Brighton, we played pretty well, but that I've seen with my own eyes, it would have to be the Reading match. And we you know, we did make them look like a poor team. Huddersfield, you look at the stats, Huddersfield were apparently in the game, but Reading were never really in that game when you look at it. And as I say, they looked like a terrible, poor team. And, you know, they weren't, because they just had like five wins on the trot or something.
That's right.
So for me, that was my performance of the season so far that I've seen.
Okay, very good. Mike, how about you? You've been to a few away matches. So do you agree with David that it's the Reading match, or would there be a different match that stands out to you the most?
Well, the thing is, you know, what was the best match? Well, yeah, you know, we won two games 5-0, and the Reading game, you know, it looked like it was going to be a cagey. I remember doing the show with you, Russ, and it's going to be a cagey game, one goal, you know, and of course it's complete opposite, wasn't it?
Yes.
But so that was a great performance, great result. But I'm going to be maybe a little bit controversial here. I have to say the Wolves game. Now, I might feel completely different if we hadn't got a last minute equaliser. But for pure footballing entertainment and everything around about the game, I have to go with the Wolves game. It was the best game I've seen this season. You know, the football we played in the first half was just excellent. As I say, as good as the Tigernagh years. And it was such a pity in the second half we let it slip. But then again, you're at an away ground, the fans are boisterous, the manager's got his team attacking us, and so as a competition, as a you know, between two teams that were going for the win, I'm gonna say the Wolves game for me was the best game I've seen this season. It was not a, you know, Reading great result, Wolves was the best match or game I've seen this year.
Okay, I'm going to come back to you a little different way. How about most satisfied? Because I want to mention a match. I want to see if this one is up there, and that would be Brentford.
Oh yeah, I love being Brentford 2-0. Yeah, that was really enjoyed that one.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie about that.
Okay, I just had to mention it because I know we're talking about the best matches, but I wanted to mention that because I remember the atmosphere. The way that you described it was incredible. So I couldn't move on until we talked a little bit about that match. So very good there, Mike. All right, guys. Now let's now get into the transfer window because it's opening very soon. So what I want you guys to do is I want you to give in order your top three positional needs from 3 to 1, and please do it all together. So you know, and I have a feeling you guys might agree. Who knows? You might disagree. So, David, I'm going to start with you from 3 to 1. Give me the three positional needs that Fulham need to bolster here.
I think we're going to agree on this.
maybe not the order, though. Maybe not the order.
Yeah, that's well. I suppose the least pressing one would be the goalkeeper, because okay. we have two reasonable goalkeepers. I know there's been this debate. Yes, we could upgrade on the position, but we have a reasonable goalkeeper. I mean, we don't have pajamas playing now. We have a 55-year-old statue playing in goal. We have someone who is a competent goalkeeper, but we would like him to be better. So I think in third place, I would go with that. Second place, probably got to be a centre-back, I think, really. We've seen losing Callas, what a blow that was. And also the fact that none of the others have really been up to the task. We might be losing Ream, I don't know. Maddle has been sidelined and was a bit rusty, especially when he came on. And of course, Sigurdsson, I really don't know. This guy doesn't seem to be able to jump for the ball. And he makes a lot of errors on the ground as well. So I'm not sure if he's actually an improvement. So I think we need a back. Number one position, really, and this is a hard one because the system we have doesn't require it, but I think we do need an alternative to Chris Martin, someone who can do that role that he does. We tried on Saturday and I wasn't happy with IET in that role particularly. I don't think he brought much to the role. He was, you know, he'd scored a goal, but he wasn't really getting the ball. He wasn't holding the play up. We weren't dominating in the midfield as much as we do when we have a man to hold it up. We know that Matt Smith is a blunt instrument, to use a James Bond quote there from Casino Royale, obviously. But, you know, he has a job, but he's not the ideal replacement. Woodrow is probably out in his ears. Humphreys, I don't know. Saw a little bit of him. He looked promising, but, yep, you know, he's got a long way to come. So, you know, if Chris Martins gets injured when we play Derby again, if he gets suspended, if he has a bad run of form, we haven't got anyone else really to do that. And I think that was where we were most at risk on Saturday. Obviously, we weren't, you know, we couldn't legislate for the fact that we were going to lose both centre-backs. And I'm going to be very interested to find out whether Sigurdsson was injured or whether he was hauled off for his error. Because, you know, and if he was Slavisa actually risk playing McDonald as a centre-back in the next match? Or would he put in Ream and Maddle? Because he could have also could play McDonald there if he feels he's just as useful, and play Parker in centre midfield, which would be quite controversial. But, you know, we've seen McDonald a couple of times there. But it's I think, as I say, the goalkeeper is the least of the important of the three. The striker and the centre-back are the two more pressing ones. You could argue that the centre-back is actually more important than the striker, really. But that's obviously now, after we're talking with hindsight, that we've lost Callas. Sure. Hopefully for not too long. But if we could only have another Callas alongside Callas, and, you know, two Callases, and if we lose one...
David, I called you Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. It wouldn't be a cottage talk without a Goldman either, of course. So,
David.
If we can have two Callases, at least if we lose one, we can still manage okay with a Ream or a Sigurdsson or a Maddle for one match, perhaps. But we can't manage without no Callases. So, somewhere between Callas and a striker and a centre back, really, you could rotate either of those as your first choices. But third place goalkeeper.
Okay, very good, Mike. Over to you. David is going with goalkeeper as number three, and he's going back and forth between centre back and striker being two and one. So, name your top three needs from three to one.
Well, I mean, yeah, we do agree on this. I mean, I look at it this way. So, what's going to be the difference between us going up and just muddling along like we are now? So, using that same sort of phrase, we can muddle along with the goalkeepers we have. You know, Button's made mistakes. We know that Bettinelli's, you know, I've said it before, they're almost the same keeper. Spin a coin, neither of them comes out and, you know, commands their box. To be fair, not many of our goalkeepers do. Maybe Jeanrin, but so goalkeeping wise, I think we can muddle through. But if there is someone out there who they feel can make a massive difference, then you know, by all means, go and get him. But yeah, he would be third in my list of priorities. The same with the centre backs, really. You know, I mean, it's not quite like last year where Savisa had a choice of five or six of them, and he would, you know, mix and match, trying to find some combination. We know the combination here is Callas plus one, and if he isn't available, then it's, you know, it's fine now. Who, Maddle, Sigurdsson, Ream, which one of those guys, those two guys can work together. So if we were stuck with just those four centre-backs for the rest of the season, again, we could muddle through, because we're scoring goals and okay, we're letting some leads go, but yeah, I mean, there are good players in there for all their faults. Sigurdsson, we didn't touch on the most disappointing player so far this year, but it has to be Sigurdsson. I mean, it's you know, it's we broke the rule which every team should use, and that's do not buy a player off the back of a good summer tournament, and he's showing all the things wrong with that. So I have to agree with that. You know, we need a striker because, you know, I like Martin. I will fight his corner and, you know, say he's the right person for the system. Other people don't like him, think he's lazy, all this kind of stuff. But whatever it is, it's working. You can't fault it, really, because we have been getting the results and the goals, and he has a proven record. But we do need someone else, someone who's better than Smith, someone who's better than Woodrow. And if we go into, say, February with Martin, Smith and Humphreys, then, because I think Woodrow would go, that's not going to be good enough, I don't think, to get, because you're going to be asking Martin to play every minute of every game, which he has pretty much done over the last, you know, 9 games or so. So, yeah, another striker, another championship quality striker. Do we want him to be a bit different? Maybe, but then what does that do to the system when Martin doesn't play? I don't know. So, you know, we saw on Saturday a forward line with Aiti in the middle, so a nippy, fast player, and we didn't look the same type of team, did we? You know, so it, for me, it's striker, then it's a centre-back, then it's a goalkeeper. And I ideally, if we're only going to get two or three players in the window, please God be a striker and a centre, you know, that's the prime, that we must be out there getting one.
Okay, very good there, Mike. And I actually agree with everything that you guys have said. And believe it or not, I think the number one need is still striker. I do. I think striker is the number one need. You know, but I can make an argument for centre back as well, and goalkeeper is number three. So I'm kind of with you guys. Let's now talk about potential players to leave Fulham. And let's start here, because this one actually surprised me. This has been ongoing. I saw an article today by, I believe his name is Stephen Nicholson, with the Derby Telegraph, talking about the Chris Martin situation. And that Fulham are now linked to another striker. Could this mean something about Chris Martin? And I actually tweeted with him. I said, I don't think it does. I don't see Chris Martin leaving Fulham. In fact, I think Fulham are going to sign him permanently. And I actually listened to his interview at halftime of the last match. Sounded like to me he's a player that actually wants a permanent move. That's my opinion. But I don't see him leaving. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on this, because there's been talk about this. Fulham hold all the cards here in regards to Chris Martin. I don't see him leaving.
Okay, so I specifically asked Alistair McIntosh today, Chris Martin, can Derby recall him and pay other feedback, or is there any way they can recall him without our agreement? And he went, no, there is not, and we want to keep him, and that's that, he said.
Okay.
So, as far as I'm concerned, he's not going anywhere, from what I was told.
Oh, great.
But we do need another striker. So, yes, we are going to be linked with other strikers. But competition is good, and we need it even as backup. And I think we all know that McLaren likes him and, you know, would never have sent him out on loan if he was manager at the time. But he's at our place. We have an agreed fee. I would hope we buy him in January, because the worst thing in the world that could happen is we get to the playoffs and play Derby either in the final or in the two legs, and we can't play Martin because technically he's still on loan. And that would be a monumental cock-up by Fulham.
Okay, very, very good point there on the playoff situation there, Mike. And, you know, it's interesting. I do hope that they take care of this in January. David, over to you. Players that could potentially leave, I actually saw some speculation with Cardiff City and Marcus Bettinelli, which I found interesting, goalkeeper. Could you see him potentially leaving?
Only, I think, if they're going to bring someone else in. Maybe on loan, potentially. For game time, but as I say, I wouldn't think they'd get rid of him and leave us just with Joran and backing up Button at the moment. So I wouldn't know that one. I think the one that we probably all know is likely to be the case is Woodrow. I think
I was just about to mention that. You know,
he's been marginalised completely since this. I mean, you could say the same for Smith, really. If we're going to bring another striker in, much as I like Matt Smith and he's kind of, you know, he's slightly off. I think anyone who's, you know, used to first team football and now finds himself, well, you know, even struggling to get on the bench, let alone game time, we could say the same for Tunnicliffe. We could say the same for LVC and, you know, other people that, you know, you wouldn't dream of getting rid of, you know, previously. So, but I think Woodrow would be the most likely one, as, a, you know, he's behind Smith and Humphreys now, supposedly in the pecking order, and we only play with one striker. And sometimes, you know, as on Saturday, we play with no out-and-out strikers. So what chance does Woodrow have? Very little. Tunnicliffe is obviously behind Parker, but I think he probably has more of a role to play. Certainly, if McDonald or Parker were unavailable, you're most likely to see Tunnicliffe on the bench, I think, to do that role. Tim Ream, we've talked about that. He's on a very long contract, lots of money, so it would be good business probably to get rid of him if he's not going to feature.
Right.
But we've already identified we need another centre-back. So if we are going to sign a better centre-back, we're going to sign another Callis, then we don't need Ream. Although Ream, you know, he has his uses that he can play at left-back as well. We have two arguably better players you can play at left back there, so that need for cover is less. So I think Woodrow is the most likely one for me. Maybe Ream, maybe Smith, Tunnicliffe, maybe, but I doubt that one. I mean, obviously from the periphery and further afield, I don't know. You know, out of the youngsters or out of any of those, George Williams is back at the moment, I believe, but
yep.
I'd expect him to go back out on loan again for the second half of the season. And then and there's other people who aren't getting in the squad at the moment, people like Yozabed, but he's a new player and he has to find his feet still. There may yet be a role for him in the team. I'm not sure where with everyone playing as well as they are at the moment. But I think Woodrow is the big, it would be the biggest casualty of the lot. Yeah, okay.
And I could see Matt Smith as well. Mike, I have a question for you as we're talking about players potentially leaving. I can't imagine this player leaving. Let me just stress this. But I was asked this on the championship roundtable, and there's no speculation. Let me stress when I say this, there's none. There's no speculation on this player. But I was asked, could I see a Premier League team coming in for Tom Kearney? And would Fulham allow him to leave? And I said, no, I can't imagine that Fulham would let him go. I could see a Premier League team coming in for him, but I could see a bid potentially happening. So I want to get your thoughts on this. Nothing, there's no speculation on it. Could you see a Premier League team coming in for Tom Kearney?
Yeah, I could see one of the teams near the bottom, you know, bottom six or so, saying, asking about whether they could get him or not. But, it would need a lot of money. And I don't think Jokanović is going to, want to see him go. And again, one of the things I was told today is that no one's leaving the club unless Jokanović says, yes, that's fine. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to make a push for the playoffs, and that's what we're talking about throughout this show,
yeah,
then we're going to need players like Kearney. And,
course,
every player has a price. Are you going to sell him for $5 million? No. But if someone came along with 10, you've got to say, that's an interesting figure. So, yeah, I'm sure someone will come in with some kind of, is he available question. But, and I've seen Burnley mentioned, but, there's a good chance that we may get in the playoffs and we may overtake a team that he joins and who get relegated. So I always wonder about players who join Premier League relegated threatened teams, because there's always a chance that, they're going to pass the team they left. So I think he's going to stay. I think he enjoys London. And so I'm not too concerned there. We might see a couple of the other players that, like Dave has mentioned, move on, but I don't see any of the main squad leaving as such.
Okay, one last name I have to mention because there's speculation. There's going to continue to be speculation on this player, Ryan Sessegnon, and I just saw some more speculation today. Mike, I can't imagine Fulham would let him go at this point. There's a price for everyone. I think it would have to be extremely high to let Ryan Sessegnon at such a young age, 16, with such a bright future go. But it's an interesting situation. What are your thoughts about Ryan Sessegnon with Fulham right now?
Okay, so, I'm not 100% sure on this, but, there is people saying that he has signed a pre-contract in that sense, because you can't sign a contract when you're his age.
Right.
But, again, he's meant to be quite level-headed. His brother's in the youth setup as well, and he's got his head screwed on apparently. So I'm sure Tottenham as usual, will come along and say, "Oh, we fancy him," but I think we're safe on that front. Again, silly amounts of money, but you know, he's not 17 until the summer,
right?
Or May, June time. So I think we're fine in that position. He's getting enough game time, and you know, they're looking after him, so I don't think it's an issue.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, let's end the show by just talking about the teams ahead of Fulham right now. And just, we're not going to focus on the top two because I don't see it possible that Fulham are going to catch Brighton or Newcastle at this point. But potentially all these other teams, and I want to get your thoughts on them. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Right now in eighth place on 34 points is Birmingham City. They just changed their manager. I think it was ridiculous that they did this, but they did. So talk about Birmingham City. Can you see Fulham being ahead of them by the end of the season?
Well, I mean, yes, teams, sacking managers, bringing people who don't have any kind of record on getting a team promoted and cause unrest. So every team above us, I'm very happy with that. So, no, I think, you know, Rowett got Birmingham playing a certain way beyond their abilities, and Zola, he doesn't really have the record. You know, the fans are upset, players are upset. So I think they will fall by the wayside, and we will overtake them. But that's the best thing could have happened is, Rowett getting sacked.
I agree
for
with
us.
You there, Mike.
I feel sorry for him, but it's just the way football goes.
Okay, very good. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and forth with the different teams just for time's sake. So, David, I'm going to give you Derby County, which are seventh on 36 points. Again, Fulham are on 33 points. Thoughts on them? Do you think Fulham can overtake them eventually or potentially be in the playoffs with them?
Well, obviously, Saturday was fresh in my memory, and they are a good team. The table doesn't lie. Their record is good. 7 straight wins before Saturday, I believe so. You can't really do much better than that. And they are, you know, on a great run of form at the moment. They play like Fulham, similar style of football. And so, yeah, I would fear them, you know, that they can also, you know, our style of football, when we've done it, has been successful in this division now. And I think they'll be up there as well. And yeah, it could end up that we may end up having to play them at the end of the season for the big prize, which is, you know, a good reason for making sure Chris Martin has signed before then,
as you said
before. So yeah,
good point.
I mean, yeah, you know, I don't know how they'll fare after Saturday. You know, whether that will, you know, all runs come to an end. If they can carry on the way they're going, it's going to be hard for us to catch them, let alone anything else. So I think they're in the ascendancy at the moment.
Okay, very good. I'm going to go right back to you because I want to give Mike the team after this. So now we're going to look at, in sixth place, Sheffield Wednesday with 37 points. Sixth place for Sheffield Wednesday. Thoughts on them, David?
Well, you know, again, pretty fresh in the memories. Now, you know, in terms of fixtures, we've got to go away there. The last game of the season, we have to go there.
Last
that could be a real
season. Yeah.
That could be a real decider. I mean, we're going to go to Huddersfield. The way game before that, and Norwich the game before that. So we've got three tough away games on the trot towards the end of the season.
We do.
But Sheffield Wednesday, they frustrated us, and we're going to have to find a way to unfrustrate them. If they can, you know, they come to Craven Cottage and do that at home. They've got a good vociferous crowd there normally, but I don't know how their style sort of matches up really with you know, other teams in the division. However, you know, they are up where they are again, and you know, they're there on merit. They're not there because of a fluke, so their style is obviously effective as well. But based on pure footballing ability, I'd have said Derby County are the better side than Sheffield Wednesday out of the two if I had to make a snap judgment based on one game and what I saw. So I think, you know, Derby out of those two so far are the ones we have to be chasing. I think Derby would ultimately go above Sheffield Wednesday on performance and ability.
Okay, very good there. All right, Mike, I'm going to go back to you. We haven't seen this team in a while. It was near the beginning of the season, but I've actually watched them on the television a couple of times. This is Leeds United. They are currently fifth on 38 points. So Fulham are 5 points behind them. But I got to be honest with you, I haven't been impressed by this team, but As David will always say, the table doesn't lie. They're there for a reason. Thoughts on Leeds United? Can Fulham leapfrog them eventually by the end of the season?
Stealing my thunder again, Russ. You know, I mean... What are they doing there? That's what I don't understand. Yes, Gary Monk has got them playing again out of their skin. I didn't really rate Monk at Swansea, but he's obviously got something about him. My only hope is the chairman chips in soon and, decides he doesn't like Monk or he wants to interfere with the transfers or coaching or something mad up at that club. So my only hope is that they will explode and start dropping down the league as well. Because, they have the fans, they have the ground. It's an intimidating place to go. And they are, one of the bigger clubs in the Championship. So we really need them to fall away. But like you said, I've seen them play and I just wonder, what have they got that's keeping them up there? I just don't understand it.
I just don't know. I don't know, Mike. That's why I wanted to bring it up. Because
that's why you asked me.
Yes. Well, no. No, you saw them live. You were there, right, Mike? You were there.
They're just not very good. But they are up there. And it goes back to us. We've dropped points against bottom clubs and they have got okay results. And that's why they're, 4 points ahead of us or 5 points ahead of us.
Okay, very good. All right. All right, David, I'll go back to you. Huddersfield Town are currently fourth at 39 points. Do you think Fulham can leapfrog them eventually?
Well, we can only take things into account so far. We've played them at home. We've beat them. That's all we can do there. Obviously, we can't be responsible for their other results. Again, I'm afraid to say, the table doesn't lie, so they must be there on merit. But I'm not sure how because, we absolutely mullered them really at home. Yeah. We did really well, but they're above us because they've been more consistent overall than we have. So we have to hope that, I don't think they're as good as Derby from what I saw. I mean, it's easy to judge that on the result, of course, because Derby nicked a point from Fulham and Huddersfield didn't. But out of all the teams I've seen at the Cottage so far, I tend to think Derby were the best team. I know Newcastle, obviously, are a good team and everything. Brighton, we haven't seen yet at the Cottage. Yep. But Derby were the ones that impressed me most because maybe it's because they play that style of football that Fulham play, which is more pleasing on the eye, the short, quick
passing.
Passing game rather than a sort of like a Route 1 kind of traditional old-fashioned football, blood and thunder football. But Huddersfield, I don't fear as much, but obviously we have to make up points on these. So it's our results against, the lower teams as much as anything as these teams.
Right.
We've got to get ground on them in other matches. And when we do play them, we've got to, get the points against them in these big six pointers. But Huddersfield, I don't fear them. I don't really fear anyone in the division at the moment if we can be consistent.
Very good there, David. And that's, I was going to ask you guys at the end, was there a team that you feared? And you've already kind of answered that. So thank you for doing that. Mike, over to you. I'm going to give you Reading. They're currently third at 40 points, and we all know what Fulham did against them just a little while ago, but we're going to be facing them upcoming at Reading. So thoughts on them? Do you think Fulham could actually leapfrog them? I mean, we are 7 points away from Reading, but we did a number on them.
Yeah, but, again, it goes back, they're getting the results, and we made them play badly. It's going to be an interesting test at their place. They haven't changed anything since we stuffed them, and they are still playing their way. And I think Reading are going to be, they're going to be in the playoffs at the end of the season. I think the footballing teams like ourselves and them were going to be there. I can see Derby, and can I give you my fourth team that we haven't mentioned?
Yes,
I think will be in the playoffs. I think Norwich will sack Neil, and I think they will employ someone we know quite well, and I think.
Let's see
if it happens. Well, I think Roy could go there.
Oh, don't say that.
Him and Delia are big friends.
Oh.
But. But yeah, I don't think Norwich are out of it yet, but they will sack Neil if they get a bad result on Boxing Day. So so yeah, I think Norwich can still with us.
Okay. Boy, if that happens, that would be horrible. I don't want to see that happen. I don't want to see Roy Hodgson end up in Norwich City. But goodbye you for mentioning that, Mike. You know, like you said, if there's a pass there, then they're that could be in the cards if things don't go Neil's way. So very interesting for you to bring that up. All right, guys, great show, fantastic show. But let's wrap this up, Mr. Greg. Final thoughts before we go.
Just have a good Christmas, and I'm sure we're talking between Christmas and New Year. But we got 3 games coming up, and let's hope we can get 7 or 9 points from that, and make us all happy for the start of 2017, and we can say goodbye to 2016.
Okay, Mr. Holly, final thoughts before we go.
Yeah, I'm not sure next time I'm on when you're next doing a show. So if I'm not on before Christmas, obviously I want to wish you guys both a very Merry Christmas, you and your families, and to all the people listening, of course. And yeah, I know 2016's been a pretty poor year. Lost a lot of, well-loved people have been lost in the last year. And I'm sure everybody, we've all lost people, friends and family as well, but a lot of famous people passed by the wayside, unfortunately. But it has at least seen, a resurgence in Fulham. And of course, as Mike will know, the wonderful Brexit, of course, which I know he's a big fan of. No, let's not get political, Mike. I'm just winding you up there.
Yeah, let's not go there right
now. I'm just teasing Mike. It's been the one bright thing of the year, really, I think, that we could all agree on, that Fulham are looking better potentially than we have done for several years, several seasons. And that's obviously the way we want to hope that we end 2016 and start 2017. But say, if I don't speak to you guys beforehand, and all the listeners, thank you for listening, and have a great Christmas and New Year with all your families.
Wow, that's really nice, David. It's funny. I had a final thought planned, but I'm not going to do it now because I want to end it that way. That was really nice, my friend. Your final thought really was nice. So thank you for that. Thank you, Mike, for your final thoughts and just doing the show with me. It was a great show. So thank you, guys. But it is time to wrap up this episode of Cottage Talk. For Mike, Greg, and David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.